The Guardian.
Good day to each and every one of you. This is Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I am Paul McInnes, and on this week's show, we'll meet Florence and the Machine, though Florence will be doing most of the talking. We'll be discussing, nay debating, new tunes from White Denim, Bon Iver and Martina Topley Bird. We'll be looking at the merits of free downloads and the drawbacks of becoming our pal on Facebook, and we'll also be talking White Soul. Oh, a little bit of feel good goes a long way. I need your touch to get me through my day. Watching you sleeping, I pray. Oh, please go make my feel good go away. That is Feel Good by Jamie Liddell, whose transformation from purveyor of wonky techno, first in the group Super Collider, then as a solo artist, to straight-up soul merchant has turned a few heads and raised a few questions, not least whether a musician can legitimately make the transition from one genre to another so swiftly. I met him last week, and we started by talking about the similarities between the two genres.
Prince.
Jam Machines, vocals, Super Collider, my first band. They have a lot in common. Cameo. P-Funk.
So it's the kind of the use of the technology to express that emotion or kind of help to articulate it.
Well, I mean, Christian Vogel, who I did a lot of music with, one half of Super Collider, was always like telling me, like, you can learn to play a drum machine like a guitar, you know, but you've got to look at it in a different way. It's just another instrument.
People might associate techno with an absence of emotion sometimes, whereas soul is almost the ultimate form of popular music that expresses emotion in that way.
Sex Machine, Man Machine.
Yeah. Sex Machine, Man Machine. Man has sex with machine, produces soulful techno music.
I think you said it rather well.
Thank you very much.
And someone said that I was like Stockhausen in bed with Prince.
Nice.
That wasn't quite as nice.
What's your history with soul music personally? Was it something you listened to growing up or...?
Not really, no.
When did you start getting into it?
I was about 18.
And what was it? What artists in particular brought you on?
I listened to Prince obsessively as a child and basically just wanted to know what made Prince Prince. So I dug up all of the references I could. I found Sly Stone, George, all the things that make Prince... And I was one of those kids who just, like, got one record and sat on it. I was always disappointed when people got me two records for Christmas. So I thought, what am I going to do with two?
A great voice. It's really rich, really chocolatey. I'd say it's like an Aero and a Mars mixed together in a bowl, stuck in a microwave. Is that voice, is it a gift from God, or is it? Did you refine it over time to make it sound more like that?
Well, it's a gift from my mum, really, isn't it?
Well,
and my mum is God. I don't know. My mum says she is responsible, though. She used to sing nursery rhymes. She's always been in, like, choirs. She still is. It's just one of those musical households, and I'd go around my mate's house and no one would be singing. I'd be like, oh, okay. It's not every house that does this.
Now, how long has Jim been inside you, waiting to come out? Because it is a stark departure in terms of your recording output, recorded output.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I didn't record any of the music like a fool that I was making back in the day. And I have been, like, singing, obviously, for a while and doing all kinds of bits with bands. Jim's been in me as long as I know, but just no one ever called me Jim. My sister calls me Jam, my mum as well, which is nice. I didn't really want to call the album Jam, you know. Obviously. We both know I won't be standing still, but to have your love is such a thrill. That's why I'm asking you to wait for me. By my side, I just can't sleep. That's why I'm up all night counting sheep, hoping and praying for me.
you know, such a departure, it's had its critics. I mean, there have been some people who've compared Jim to something from Jamiroquai, but there's also been people who say that you are trying to make a commercial breakthrough. Is that in, does that upset you when you hear that?
No, why should it?
I mean, have you become kind of inured to criticism, or do you take it personally when people say things about you?
When I made this record, Rick Rubin invited me to his house because there was some interest to sign it to Columbia. And first thing he did was come in and say, Jamie, you've made a great record. So I heard that from Rick Rubin in his own house. Basically, it was perfect timing because once I'd heard that, I thought, great, now I'm immune to all criticism because...
The main man.
You know, it's, everyone likes a harsh critic and it's very easy to criticise anything, so whatever. I don't mind. One will compare me to, I don't know, Jimmy Tarbuck. Next will compare me to Madonna.
Recording this interview the day after you did a big show at Coco and a crowning performance in the UK for the launch of your album. And performance has always been something central to what you do, and you've always been very highly regarded for your performances. How do you view performance as an art?
I like to put on a show, but like I said, I grew up watching Prince and he sets a pretty high bar. I can't do the
still
splits.
Setting it. No.
I've tried. It's changing. Obviously, now I've got a band. I played solo for 6 years, which was a joy. I got a lot of attention as a result. There's a kind of one-man band. I mean, which started out as a necessity. You know, I just needed the cash. But then Beck heard it and wanted me to open for him, which I did. I opened for James Brown, Bjork, a bunch of folk. Kind of, it was a unique show. But obviously doing that 6 years, it got a little bit like Dinners for One, you know. It's all right, you know. But having this band on this tour is taken a bit of getting used to. But I just knew that it was time to make the move and these songs deserve it. And a lot of the time in the solo show, when I couldn't do a song, I just used a playback and I wasn't prepared to do that this time. So there's solo in the show as well. So I'm sampling me and the band this time, learning how to, like... You know, and stop people comparing me to Jamiroquai.
That is Jamie Liddell, whose new album Jim is out now and who you'll be able to catch live lots over the coming months, but only if you live in Germany or North America. It's Singles Club! It's Singles Club! It's Singles Club! I think I've been infected by the sunshine, Rosie Swash.
Good.
How are you?
I'm all right.
Yes, you feeling well?
Yes, very well.
Did you make use of the bank holiday?
I went to Paris.
You went to Paris?
Yeah. I went to see Portishead.
Oh, bloody hell. How was that?
They were amazing. A brilliant light show. She sounds flawless live. And the French go crazy for a bit of Portishead.
Oh, great. That sounds really spectacular.
Spectacular.
That does. Wow. Good. Let's go back because it's Singles Club. And that's the time of the show where we debate new music and whether we like it or would rather sick up our own livers and eat those livers than listen to it. Here... to eat his own liver in our presence this week. It's only Mr. Michael Hann, editor of the Guardian's Film and Music section. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Paul. Hello, Rosie. I went to Walton-on-the-Naze for the bank holiday, if you're interested. Lost a fortune on the two-piece slots, but won 3 key rings, 2 bouncy balls and a miniature model Mercedes.
That is fantastic. Did the Rolling Stones play an intimate show for you or anything like that? Or was there...
No, but there was an ABBA tribute band playing outside a pub on the seafront just as we got back in the car. At times, they approached being in tune.
Hey!
Good for
Walton
them.
Walton-on-the-Naze.
Walton-on-the-Naze is where it's happening, man. Who the Essex Sunshine Coast.
Who would have thought that? Right, anyway, music. We start with White Denim. This is Let's Talk About It.
Let's react to it.
That is Let's Talk About It by White Denim. White Denim are a three-piece from Austin, Texas, who were one of the wows of this year's South by Southwest. Frontman James Petrelli is the head honcho, writing lyrics apparently inspired by Gertrude Stein, who was one of the great champions of modern art in the 20th century and author of, you may not be surprised to hear, some reasonably inaccessible poetry. On the other hand, Petrelli only got into music after he was forced to abandon dreams of playing professional baseball because he kept getting hammered. Rosie Swash, White Denim.
I like.
You like?
I do like. I know that they don't sound anything like Devo, but every time I listen to that song, it reminds me of Whip It, the way they sing. But other than that, they don't sound anything like Devo. I think they're also very good live. Now that I've been, I saw them at Bloomsbury Bowling Alley, and they play continuously, and they sort of, someone was obviously saying, you know, it's 5 minutes, and they're like, okay, we can squeeze three more songs in. I love that. It's very infectious, and you can hear that in the song, I think.
No, you certainly can. Can you hear the lyrics, though?
Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
No, I can't. And I did try and look them up on the old interweb, and I didn't have much luck because they are... I guess that's why one of the reasons people compare them to Kings of Leon, because you can't really understand what Caleb Fellowell says.
It's also fair. You can probably compare them to any obscure poet you like, because if you can't decipher what they're saying, yeah, nobody can disprove it. Michael, is there a better hook in rock music this year so far?
It's a great riff. It's like a coiled spring unwinding. It just seems perfectly logical. It couldn't do anything else except carry on like that. Although I wouldn't have minded if they did cut the single off a little bit early before it gets into the noodly bit at the end.
It does go noodly.
What, just noodle? But I disagree with you about them live. I was really disappointed by them live. I saw them the night after you at the Barfly, about 12:30, when I was by 20 years the oldest person there, and I think most of the audience thought I was in the Police, not the band. Although, despite my hair, I know I passed for Stuart Copeland in certain lights. And I really thought they just junked the single when they played it live. You couldn't hear the riff at all. They turned it into this kind of vaguely psychedelic extravaganza. They seem to be one of those really infuriating American bands who can be absolutely brilliant, but if they're in the mood, they go, no, we're not going to entertain you. We're going to entertain ourselves.
And is that not part of what people like about them, though? Is there unwillingness to conform?
There's unwillingness to conform, and there's being willful. And I think... I don't think it's necessarily wrong to be willful, but when you're coming over and you're on the back of this huge buzz, and I think everyone there wanted to see a really straightforward half-hour kick out the jams. Brothers and Sisters will do the clean version. We want to see them kick out the jams, and they didn't, and I think they decided not to, almost, which was disappointing, especially given that was past my bedtime.
Yeah, well, shameful confession here, I'd actually left about half an hour before the band came on. I just couldn't
stand
up. I knew
this, I just didn't want to embarrass you.
No, it was about 12:45, and I was so tired. Rosie, have they got other tunes like this in their armoury?
They've got quite... It's what Michael was saying about the end of this track when it goes all noodly. There's a bit more of that where they kind of go, hey, we're not just a rock band. We can do funny noises. We can do blips and weird stuff, which you don't. I don't think you get live. I didn't get live when I saw them. There's a bit more of that on the rest of the stuff.
There's nothing as compelling as this song on the rest of the album.
It's definitely the standout single.
Hokely dokely. That is White Denim and Let's Talk About It, and it is out right now. Next up... Skinny Love by Bon Iver. Come on, skinny love, what happened? So cold on the hope and leprosy.
My. Someone knows fools, so honestly.
That's Bon Iver with Skinny Love. Bon Iver is the nom de chanson of Justin Vernon, who recorded his debut album For Emma Forever Ago all alone in a desolate shack in Wisconsin in the winter of 2006. It is obligatory that you mention this tale when talking about Bon Iver. I don't know why, it just is. Bon Iver is a bastardization of the French Bon Iver, meaning good winter. He had thought about calling himself Mal Automne, but decided against it. What is it, Michael, about Bon Iver that makes him stand out from all the other acoustic singer-songwriters that have been out these last couple of years?
That's a very good question, one I was going to ask you.
Because I wouldn't be able to tell you. It all blends.
I know the official party line is he's the most talented man with an acoustic guitar to come out of the Midwest since Bob Dylan. But they all sound the same to me. They really did. I mean, I know this is a shortcoming in me, and I apologise to all fans of acoustic singer-songwriters, many of whom are among my closest friends. Fans, rather than actual singer-songwriters. But it blends into one. I mean, the album was recorded, wasn't it, after a difficult breakup, and he's reflecting on his girlfriend. And to be honest, I listen to it and think, well, I can see why your girlfriend left you, because you're not a lot of fun, fella. You want to cheer up, have yourself a bit of a party, and she might have come back. Instead, you're sitting around on a Saturday night moping.
Yeah.
Very talented, but not for me.
When you see White Denim, they've
yeah,
got
she's
all the,
they've
got
White the, Denim,
exactly. They're making all their noises. And pulling all the ladies. I mean, for me, somebody who doesn't like any acoustic singer-songwriting, I don't mind Bon Iver, and I don't mind it for two reasons. One, the slightly spectral air you get about the production, which may be because it was recorded in a shack, or maybe because those original recordings were then taken and slightly modified, but also the voice. I mean, it's the falsetto that just makes it stand out and sound different to me. Rosie, do you like that?
I do like it, and I agree with you. I think it's his voice. It's falsetto, but it's grainy and it's very masculine.
Okay, not White Denim, not getting everybody, it seems.
grainy, very grainy. I appreciate what Michael's saying. I find that I love Bonnie Prince Billy, but I don't have a lot of time for a lot of other acoustic singer-songwriters. This kind of alt folk, where you feel like it's got that kind of rustic, I grew up on a farm and just, you know, had to get this out of me and just grab the guitar. And knowing his backstory, the, you know, the breaking up of the band he was in before, Diarmond Edis, and the breaking up with his girlfriend and stuff, it helps. Of course it helps, because you feel like it's not contrived.
Yes, exactly. But I suspect, and obviously we've contributed to this, but the more you repeat that story, the more that story in itself feels contrived.
Maybe it's not even true.
Maybe, yes. Well, I think to a certain... Laura Barton is a big fan of Bon Iver and has in fact been in direct correspondence with his father, and who apparently verifies it all 100% accurate. But yes, I do take your point. There are so many of those bands out there who sing about things that just patently you cannot believe that they would do. And there is something authentic.
I agree with you. I mean, it's not that I dislike it. It's that I find it difficult to work out why something like that stands out from many others. But I completely appreciate, yes, that it does sound as if it's sung about things that have happened to him. I think one of the most irritating trends in recent American music has been the kind of archness of middle-class college kids singing about growing up on the farm and grandpa's leg was repossessed by the bank and then 14 dwarves came and turned it into a dust bowl, that sort of stuff.
Indeedy doody. Skinny Love by Bon Iver is out now. Final track on Singles Club. It's Poison by Martina Topley Bird. Why you do the things you do? That's Martina Topley Bird with Poison. Martina Topley Bird made her name singing alongside Tricky on his debut album Maxine Quay. She continued to collaborate with him on two more albums before pursuing a solo career. Her debut album, Quixotic Don Quixote Quixotic? Quixotic, received great reviews and a nod for the Mercury Prize in 2003, but few sales followed. Her second album, The Blue God, is out soon and has been produced by Danger Mouse, only his 450,000th project of the year so far.
Of the week.
Yeah, of the week. Rosie Swash, can you tell me why everybody is turning to Danger Mouse? Is it because Baron Greenback has descended in their back garden?
Because the Niles Barkley stuff is totally retro. Everybody likes it. Credible, but sounds great on the radio. Sold loads of records, you know, and everyone wants them to produce the next crazy in him.
The other thing is that he's a super fan as well. So he's produced the Shortwave Set album because he loves the Shortwave Set. And I think he produced this because he was absolutely enthralled to mid-90s trip-hop and wanted to find some way to recreate that sound himself.
Yeah, and I heard he'd always wanted to work with the Black Keys too, and that he's done that project with them. But not all of these projects are succeeding. The Black Keys was kind of mixed, got mixed reviews, and the Shortwave Set In and Out too. What do you make of this?
I think Martina Topley Bird is always full of so much promise, and she never delivers on it. And it's a real shame because I love listening to it, and it's familiar from the stuff she did with Tricky, she manages to sound sort of sinister and innocent at the same time, but it's all in the quality of her voice. I don't find the lyrics particularly interesting at all. None of the music itself really goes anywhere. It's all quite easy on the ear. I don't know, maybe she's working the wrong people or something, but I just feel like she could write a really amazing song, and she never does.
Michael, could she be a Dirty Duffy?
Well, she's retro, but in a different way from Duffy, isn't she? She's retro for a period that's much more recent. I kind of agree with Rosie that there's clearly bags and bags and bags of talent there, but still waiting for it to come through. And actually, I don't think necessarily getting someone who was enthralled to the sound of 10 years ago to produce the record was really the very best idea. I think she'd have been better being challenged with something that took her out of that sort of comfort zone. It sounded to me like the records that one heard at dinner parties some time ago.
Oh, albeit with a 60s influence, there's a kind of air of Austin Powers hanging over this project as well.
But even that, we got that from Candy Payne, you know, more than a year ago,
yeah,
didn't we?
So. That's true. The Duffy observation was simply the fact that her voice has a unique quality to it, has a roughness that is not in any way contrived and just sounds authentic whichever way she sings it. And I wonder whether that might not come out were she given better material to work with. But I guess we're all in agreement on that, really. Okay, that's the final track from Singles Clubs. That's Martina Topley Bird and Poison, and it's out now. You lot out there, you wonderful, beautiful people, didn't hold back on Kid Sister in re-reviewing last week's tracks. Kid Sister is the other half of A-Track, Kanye's DJ, and she's said to be part of a booming Chicago hip-hop scene, though nobody on the blog seemed to think so. It's safe to say Kid Sister is the product of nepotism. I can't imagine a real A&R man heard that and thought, hey, this is the sound we're looking for, said Frisky Dingo. SV80 chimed in on a similar theme. I have nothing against high-profile producers getting their borderline talentless girlfriends to rap badly over electro records. Offy is ace, after all. Pause there. Rosie Offy, who's...
She's on Ed Banger. She's a white female rapper.
But is she going Florida. Out with any other Ed Bangers? She go out with Busy P?
I don't actually know who she's going out with. I didn't know that.
We'll report back on this next week.
She's going out with Larry from the canteen.
Anyway, Kid Sister, to go back to SV80, isn't interesting or distinctive enough to carry it off. It's a shame she's getting so much more attention than the likes of Yo Majesty and Bunny Rabbit, who do the same thing with infinitely more style, although I read that Yo Majesty have signed to Domino Records now, so I suspect you'll be hearing more about them. Pervader of Joy made his, or indeed her, debut on the blog this week with an all-round positive appraisal of Tunage. I know it's not very credible, but there's a time and a place for dumb party music, and Kid Sister, in my opinion, is right there. I thought the synth sounded like slowed-down clangers. Is that the sort of thing that happens when we don't cut out outtakes from our podcast? Producer Scott laughing there. Although to me, the Animal Collective was just a barrage of merry shouting, not unlike Los Campesinos. Maybe it needs a few listens, but it just brought back memories of my primary school music class. Maybe that's how they made it, Tim Jones. Tim was wondering quite how they recorded it. He considered it a musical mystery. If you two want to have your comments intoned somewhat poorly by me on the pod, then get on down to blogs.guardian.co.uk/music and post your thoughts on this week's tracks from White Denim, Bon Iver and Martina Topley Bird, or indeed, the stuff crammed into this week's montage. Well, I am, and Cheryl Cole. Heartbreaker. Scarlett Johansson, Falling Down. I'm just a hopeless romantic. A little dirty mind. Somebody loves me, somebody somewhere. Cazals, Somebody Somewhere. Somebody loves me, somebody somewhere. And Wiley, Wearing Me Rolex. Michael, you once famously, at least around these parts, described Crystal Castles as making squinky squonk music. With that in mind, what do you make of Wiley's Rolex tune?
Paul, can I confess to something?
Yes.
I'm the only person in Britain who hasn't even heard it.
Boom! And onwards! Your snaps don't stick, Yeah. That is Florence and the Machine with Kiss with a Fist, and apparently that's better than none. Rosie, you met them recently. What's the machine like, and does it experience emotions like a real human?
Well, Paul, the machine isn't real.
That's the sound of me whacking pen on desk.
The machine used to be Dev Hines. Likes to be champion on old guitar, but she's got her own band now.
Does she sometimes play backing with Lightspeed? Does she sometimes play?
She has sung on stage, I think.
Yeah.
Her real name is Florence Welch. I caught up with her at the Camden Crawl. She's crazy. Tried to distract her from the cold by asking her what she was doing this time last year.
I was probably getting ready to go to the Camden Crawl.
Really?
Yeah. Not realising that I'd lose my mind and my phone and my wallet.
And why your mind?
I just went mad. Like a little spinning top in a sailor dress all around Camden. Didn't even play.
For people that can't make it to Camden Crawl today and haven't seen you before, how would you describe your live show?
Oh, a bit of a shambles. We've been practicing, so maybe we'll be a bit more professional. But yeah, it's a bit messy sometimes. But it's fun. I enjoy it.
So, in terms of your musical influences, which I'm sure you're not sick of talking about at all, you're a fan of Bruce Springsteen, is that right?
Oh, I love a bit of Bruce.
Because you did a cover version of one of his songs with Kid Harpoon.
Kid Harpoon is the real fan, do you know what I mean? Like he's the real fan, but he introduced me to him, and, you know, everyone loves Bruce. He keeps the fire burning for all of us.
But in terms of actually your music, where does the gothic element to your music come from?
I don't know, you'd have to ask my shrink. It's just sort of a bit of, I'm really morbid. I've got a real fascination with
but
that.
But you don't come across as a morbid person.
I know, I'm not even like, I'm morbid, I don't, I'm, but I'm just fascinated by, like, I always keep clippings of like things that I've, like, I'm just totally fascinated by, sort of, you know, suicide and death, like accidental death, like murder and like all that kind of stuff. Just, but is that interesting? Like, I don't
but
think
is it because you're afraid
in that?
Of it,
no, I'm just fascinated, totally fascinated. And what is there more than just like death? You know, like, it's not even like a, I don't think it's like a dark subject. It's like, you know, who will die first? Like, it's just the biggest thing.
Speaking of uses your shrink, you did actually, I've read that you actually grew up next to one of the largest, UK's largest...
The Maudsley!
Mental hospital.
You've done your research. Yeah, Camworth's like just totally full of mental people. It's amazing. Like, there's this guy who used to wander around just like shouting at walls. Like, it's really, really big. Be like just talking really, really angrily to the walls and like bus stops about stuff. Like, there's this other woman called the White Woman, who is this black lady, but she used to paint herself all white, like cover herself in white paint. And then there's this guy who has a rat on each shoulder and a pink beard. Like, he's got pet rats. I don't actually think he's mad. I think he's just got pet rats. But he carries them around on his shoulder around Camberwell. I was going home from school and, like, just outside King's College, because that's opposite the Maudsley, there's just this woman, like, with really long hair, just taking all her clothes off, just, like, totally naked.
I'm starting to understand where you get some of the inspiration. Yeah. You still live there?
Yeah, I still live there. I mean, I made the gigantic leap of deciding to go to Camberwell Art College. Really flew the nest there.
What's art college like? Because it does produce an awful lot of musicians and bands.
God, I know. It's that typical, like, art college band dropout. It is nothing like fame. It's just sort of like, when I went there, I thought it'd be like, everyone would be like, you know, you know, like crazy art people, but it's just full of like quite a lot of innocent kids who like come down to London for the first time, and like it's their first experience of like being in London, which is what I found. But then I think like as they get jaded and they get older, that's when the really crazy stuff starts happening. But I only did foundation, so I didn't spend enough time there to see everyone go to seed. But I'm gonna go back and say hi to them all, like.
Not just go back to study, just...
Well, I might, like, they offer me a place to do illustration, and I think, like, if I can try and do both, like, be a super famous pop star and do this degree in illustration, I think that'd be good. But it's quite hard. I mean, I'm scatty enough as it is, and trying to hold down two sort of things might be a bit difficult. I'll have to get an illustration manager as well as a music manager.
That's Florence and the Machine, and you heard her song Kiss With A Fist, and it's not out for another month or so, but you can listen to it on a MySpace. It's very good.
A better plea for more domestic violence I don't think I've heard in recent times. Now, a few of you, well, 2 million to be exact, may have heard this song. Well, that there is Coldplay and the first single off their fourth album, which is called Violet Hill. It was released last week as a freebie and, according to their record label EMI, it has been downloaded 2 million times. Michael, Radiohead said last week that their In Rainbows experiment was a one-off, but more and more bands appear to be giving away music for free. Do you think it's a trend? What is here to stay like?
I think it is absolutely here to stay. We always look at it just in terms of the music, but in fact it's part of a wider economic picture. As the G2 cover story earlier this week talked about this notion of free economics as opposed to freakonomics, that you have to give away in order to generate revenue. It's easy, I guess, if you're Coldplay, to give away one song as a loss leader and generate interest and tons and tons and tons of publicity. But it's undoubtedly harder further down the musical food chain. We ran a feature in Film and Music not so long ago about musicians trying to find new ways to get their music out there. And one of the guys from the Crimea who were pretty well the first group to put out a whole album for free, the first group anyone had heard of certainly, said, well, I don't know if I'd want to do it again. I mean, it's hard work having to do everything yourself. I want to sign to a record label and I want my music played on the radio. And if you try and do everything yourself, you can't sort all that stuff out. So I think there will be free music, but I suspect it's going to be this kind of model of 1, 2, 3 songs put out, maybe, you know, free EPs, but encouraging people then to buy something. Or for more established acts like the Charlatans, you give it away, then you charge for a CD version for the collectors, but you're generating publicity for the tours, yeah, which is where you're going to make your money.
But, I mean, what I wonder is, will this not actually drive a lot of bands back to their day jobs before they've even started if they can't do anything without giving it away for free?
I'm not so sure about that, because you've got the possibility to kind of generate a following through MySpacing, through putting stuff out that way, which does work. And then when you go to a label, you've already got some sort of base behind you. I can't remember who, but it was a songwriter some time ago complaining to me that, in fact, the real problem with free music isn't affecting the bands. It's affecting the songwriters, especially professional songwriters, because if stuff's given away for free, they're the ones who will make absolutely nothing, because, of course, they're not going out on tour behind the songs they've written for other people. So I'm willing to accept that I am not making a blindingly original observation when I say we are in a time of transition. But what can I say? We are in a time of transition. The chips are all up in the air still.
Well, keep your eyes peeled. We'll keep ours peeled and we'll see how things develop. Thank you very much, Michael. We just got time to say thanks for all your blog and Facebook comments. On the blog, Martin Cooling and Jimmy Five were debating the merits of the Verve. To Precy, Martin thinks they're exactly the same as Cooler Shaker. Jimmy Five thinks they've got at least 7 tracks suitable for headlining a festival. Over on Facebook, however, Scott from Scotland is rowing with Erad Yakubov about Birmingham City Football Club. It takes all sorts. Some new Facebook pals, Bex Don, Moira Dennison, Cam Merton, Cher Steck, Amy Woodhouse, Claire Lim and Angeline De Dios. Thanks a lot, one and all. Next week on Music Weekly, we have... Yes, that's the Zootons with the original Valerie, and the Cosmic Scousers will be in our very own pod next week. We're back on our new day of Friday. We decided that we're more of a listen at the weekend kind of podcast. Register now to get us sent straight to your computer or MP3 player for free. You can find out how at that little old iTunes music store. Go there and type us in and you should find us with ease. That's all for this week, though. Thanks to Michael Hann.
It's a pleasure. I've just loved being here, even though it is very hot in here.
It is very hot.
It's like a jungle sometimes.
I'm going to be taking off all my clothes in a second. Thanks to Rosie.
Then I'm leaving.
We'll be back next week. Bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.